And so it's a very empowering kind of a process. And the victims will actually be parties in the trial. The victims will have their own legal team. And what we hope is that when this trial is broadcast all over Africa and all back to Chad, and people see the Chadian lawyers, the Chadian victims presenting their testimony, examining witnesses, Chadian lawyer cross-examining Hissin Habre, that this could be an inspiration to people who are looking for justice all around the world.
Can you talk about the role of the United States in propping up Hissin Habre for all of the years that he was in power?
Sure. The United States saw, under Ronald Reagan, saw Hissin Habre as a bulwark against Muammar Gaddafi. Just as President Reagan took office, Gaddafi and the then president of Chad, Gukuni Wedi, had signed an agreement to merge. And Libyan troops were entering Chad and occupying the north of Chad. And the U.S. saw Chad as the soft underbelly of the Libyan government. And Secretary of State Alexander Haig reportedly wanted to aid Hissin Habre, who was then a local warlord, as a way of bloodying Gaddafi's nose. And so the U.S. gave assistance to Habre to help him take power, and then gave military and economic assistance to Habre throughout his government, even as he was turning his country into a police state. And one of the documents that we recovered in Habre's, many years ago, I stumbled on the files of Hissin Habre's political police, tens of thousands of documents.
Where did you stumble on?
In an abandoned building in the Chadian capital of N'Djamena. And we now have all these documents on CD-ROM. We have the lists of names of people who died, of people who were in prisons.
And you just found these in this abandoned building.
Yeah, we were doing a film for a Swiss TV program on the case, and we asked to visit the headquarters of his former political police. And there, in room after room, it was like we were finding these documents. And one of the very first documents we scooped up was a document in which several of the members of the DDS, Habre's political police, received training in the United States. And when we cross-checked these names, in fact, I've interviewed a couple of the people, some of these were the most feared torturers in Chad who were receiving training in the U.S. Now, I don't say that they were received training in torture. We have no evidence of that. But the U.S. was intimately involved with Habre's political police. There was a U.S. advisor with Habre's political police. And even to the very last day of Habre's government, the U.S. was giving it military assistance.
Reid, what about the officials in Chad who worked with Habre? Could this case open the way to charges against them?
Well, it already has, in fact. I mean, we've been hoping that the approach of a trial of Hissin Habre abroad would also change the situation in Chad, because many of these people remain in powerful positions. And in fact, one of them, a police chief who is being sued by his victims in Chad, tried to assassinate the Chadian lawyer, Jacqueline Mudena, who's leading the case in Chad. He had a grenade thrown at her. And now, just in the last few weeks, actually, the Chadian government, seeing that there was justice being done on the international front, has moved to arrest and has arrested many of Habre's accomplices within Chad.
And so when will this trial take place, and where exactly is Hissin Habre right now?
Well, today he's at a police station where he's being held for questioning.
President Obama was just in Senegal.
President Obama, actually, and I have to say that the United States has, under President Obama, has been very supportive of this trial. And President Obama, when he met with President Macky Sall, congratulated him on moving forward. And the United States is providing $1 million, together with many other countries, for the support of this special court. We're expecting today or tomorrow the indictment of Hissin Habre on charges of crimes against humanity. Then the judges, the investigating judges, will have 15 months to investigate the charges. And so we're not looking at a trial here for another year and a half as these charges are investigated in Chad.
Reid, can you talk about the significance not only of Hissin Habre being picked up now and going to trial in Senegal, but you also have these other cases that you've been involved with also. You've got Duvalier in Haiti, and you've got Efrain Rios-Montt in Guatemala.
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, you have three U.S.-backed dictators from the 1980s, all facing charges for crimes against humanity. Rios Montt in Guatemala, Jean-Claude Duvalier in Haiti. And in each case, really, it's taken, you know, the victims. I mean, in Guatemala, I mean, the Ishil Maya Indians who have fought for three decades, you know, telling their stories again and again, bringing people up to the grave. This, in each case, the victims have struggled for all this time. In Haiti, people like Bobby Duval and Michel Montas, you know, who refused to allow fear to dominate. And when Duvalier came back into the country, you know, they file charges. And, you know, this is a different kind of a justice from The Hague. This is justice at a national level, where the victims are the architects of the procedure, where the cases are being played out, you know, in front of the Guatemalan people, in front of the Haitian people. In the case of Senegal, of course, it's the cases happening in Senegal. And one of our big challenges for the case of Hissène Habré is to make sure that this trial in Senegal is accessible on TV, makes a difference to people back in Chad. But this is a very positive development for justice at the national level.
How will you make the case of Hissène Habré available to people all over the world, the trial of him?
Well, the budget that we've helped to put together includes over €1 million, $1.3 million for outreach activities, for televisions, for community meetings, for bringing journalists and human rights activists from Chad to Senegal, bringing journalists from Senegal to Chad, because these countries are very far apart and don't have any direct way, even means of communication.
Why is it important to put this trial out to the world?
Well, because I think for many reasons. First of all, to
we have 15 seconds.
Sure, to show that victims can bring to justice a dictator, and I think that, you know, this case was inspired by the Pinochet case, and we hope that this case will inspire many others.
Ree Brody, I want to thank you very much for being with us, counsel and spokesperson for Human Rights Watch. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, Amate Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julia Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, Christian Goff, Esther Godarz, I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, this is Bob Longman from Sunday Afternoons here at WUSB with the WUSB Concert Billboard for Sunday, June 30th. The Band Band will be appearing at the Turning Point in Piermont, New York at 4 p.m. Brunch with Tom Falco and Kevin Griffin will be taking place at the Grey Horse Tavern, Bayport, 1 to 3. Ali Tadros will be at the Rockwood Music Hall Stage 1 in Manhattan, 7 p.m. And the Long Island Sound and Art Festival, featuring Stanton Anderson Band, Liverpool Shuffle, Reckoning, Black Dog, Teddy Kumpel, plus live painting by 75 artists at the Vanderbilt Museum in Centerport, New York. Your concert billboard for Monday, July 1st, Amber Rubarth and Dave Egger will be at the Rockwood Music Hall Stage 2 in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Your billboard for Tuesday, July 2nd. Lynn Jordan performs a musical tribute to Nina Simone at the City Winery, 8 p.m. in Manhattan. Vince Giordano will be at the Damrosch Band Shell in Manhattan. Jeremiah Birnbaum will have a late show at the Living Room in Manhattan, 10 p.m. Boz Skaggs will be at the Paramount in Huntington, 8 p.m. The Mandolin Experience with Buddy Merriam will be at the Beach Hut at Meshuck Beach, starting at 5:30 in Hampton Bays. Looking ahead to Wednesday, Driving Wheel will be at the Harborfront Park in Port Jefferson, 6:30 p.m. And Kerry Carney, Mario Stiano, David Bennett Cohen, Jerry Sorrentino, Ken Korb, and Brian Gallo will be at the John Drew Theater at Guild Hall in East Hampton. That's at 8 p.m. Tune in throughout the day, each day, to hear Concert Billboard on the air or see it at the WUSB website at wusb.fm/CBB. It's a service of WUSB Stony Brook.
And at 4 minutes after 6 o'clock, this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's time once again for Off the Wall. Thank you. I'm sorry, I have to just start talking. I like listening to the theme, but it's over 10 minutes long, and, you know, it's a sacrilege to speak over it, but we do have a show to do. This is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle out in Seattle.
Hello?
I'm picking up the phone. Yes. How you doing?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm okay. I'm pretty good. It's a hectic day out here. Actually, you know, Kyle, I just heard about this, and you probably haven't heard about this, but remember we were at the Mermaid Parade a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
And do you remember me pointing something out to both you and Spiny Norman while we were standing in line by, I think, the Freak Bar?
Well, there was a lot to point out there,
yeah.
But
there was something that was a little bit startling, like, is that safe? Is that something we should tell somebody about? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the structure, it was like a ride or something.
Yeah, it was the Astro Tower.
Okay.
And what has happened now, apparently I should have mentioned it, because right now at this very moment, the entire area has been evacuated because somebody pointed out, hey, that thing is swaying. And everyone is basically gathered around now looking at the structure.
Yeah.
And it's a whole big pandemonium scene. And, you know, had I mentioned that, I could have totally ruined the Mermaid Parade because the whole place would have been evacuated, apparently. I can't believe nobody else noticed that tower was swaying so much.
Or it took them until now to say something?
Well, it took somebody until now to say something.
Well, I noticed it with you, and I'm right with you. I mean, it was swaying pretty good.
It was really, I'm surprised nobody else saw it, or that it wasn't swaying all that time. We told Spiny Norman, we showed him, and he was like, wow, that's something. But none of us actually called a cop or anything like that. I guess we just figured that everybody knew it swayed like that.
By design.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, you don't call a cop and say, hey, that tower over there in Pisa, it's leaning over. You know, you feel like an idiot. And it would have gotten a lot of people mad at me, too, for canceling the festivities. But now, you know, 4th of July is coming. I'm sure there's not much going on over there at this point. They can close it down for a little while. But this story I just saw on our website here, don't panic. Apparently, the Astro Tower at Coney Island is swaying, which is one of the principal things that the Astro Tower should never do. I didn't know that. The FDNY Fire Department of New York reports the firefighters arrived on the scene around 4:30 p.m. today to check out the mysterious movement, and that the Department of Buildings is on the way to test the 270-foot tower's structural integrity. The other thing Astro Towers should never do is fall over. No one has been injured, but the incident has Twitter and school children in a panic. And that comes from Gothamist.com. So, yeah, you know, this goes to show the things you notice might be significant, but you'll never know if you don't say something.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
At the time, it felt like it was wrong and that it could really affect things in a horrible way if it did go wrong.
Yeah, well, only in one direction, though. I mean, they've evacuated the boardwalk. They've evacuated that little amusement area where we went through the scary ride. They evacuated all the way over, I think, towards Nathan's. But, you know, if it does fall, it's only going to fall in one direction, and that whole other area can be open. That's the developer in me speaking. That's, you know, the let's make money type of philosophy.
Right.
There's that. And a bunch of other things. Ed Snowden is applying for asylum everywhere. Have you gotten your request yet? I got a letter from him saying he'd like to camp out in my house. I had to decline. No?
What, you can't accommodate? Oh, man.
I can't. I just...
I do.
The house is a mess.
Yeah.
The cat's in one of its moods. No, I just... I just can't have somebody who's hiding from the entire intelligence community. But I'm hoping that he does find a place, you know. Bolivia, I hear, might be the newest. He's decided against Russia. I thought Russia might have been a good idea. Apparently, and this is kind of weird, Vladimir Putin said, you can stay, but you can't keep leaking American secrets, which is a bizarre thing for the leader of Russia to say, but,
right.
I think he should continue leaking whatever he has. Of course, he already has leaked quite a bit and stuff hasn't been released, but I think it's amazing that, We now know, and the world now knows, that America was spying on its friends as well. That's something that the world needs to know.
Yeah.
So anyway, tell me something about you. You took an airplane over to back to Washington yesterday.
Yes, I did. I took a flight back to Washington, and had a couple connections. A connection in the great state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, you took a little tiny plane to Philadelphia, I believe, in the middle of a raging storm.
Yeah, I did.
Well, that must have been fun.
Actually, the weather was a lot better than I thought it might have been. Uh-huh. It was a bouncy ride for some parts of it.
Uh-huh. And have you ridden your tall bike yet?
Well, funny thing about the bicycle situation, we've had a lot of different tenants, I guess you'd say,
uh-huh,
move in and out, and basically the latest where bicycles used to be parked, the latest tenant requests there's no bicycles parked out in front. And so we're moving them around, and so we sort of had to come up with an impromptu bicycle stand.
Uh-huh.
That's made out of a metal chair and some weights and stuff. And the bicycles are sort of getting comfortable in their new home before you take them for some test rides and stuff.
I see. Okay, well, that's something, I guess. I imagine the bikes were right outside this person's window, and they were tall bikes, so they weren't happy about that.
Yeah, and so what we did is move the bicycle rack down a little bit in front of one of the bicycle. There's a couple of different people. It was like the whole building, pretty much anybody who's got a bike used to use this. I guess it was an old coal chute, you know, for, heating.
Uh-huh.
And it had a railing, and it would be used for the bicycle. So, but anyway, my neighbor downstairs has a window facing the alley.
But no coal chute to tie the bike to.
I'm sorry?
He doesn't have a coal
chute. So we had to come up with a stable kind of base because there was no railing,
uh-huh,
or basement access, which formed the previous bicycle lockup area. And there are a lot of people that have bikes in this building, actually, and in Seattle and all over in different places. So it was important to do that. And
I'm kind of surprised there aren't regular professionally installed bike lock areas.
They have them, but they're for cities. The cities provide them for businesses, and residential areas is the discretion of the management, I guess. And, you know, if you're in sort of a populous area or in a building where the management isn't offering too much in the way of amenities,
uh-huh,
or extras.
Wow, that's putting it mildly, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I know we're on the radio and we can't use any sort of foul language at this hour,
yeah,
or in general, because we're such a class act. But
we are.
Let's just say it's not provided. So anyway, we have another window that someone who's friendly toward bicycles has graciously allowed us, and he's actually one of the bicycle owners down there. So uh-huh, we're gonna see how that works out, and we gotta have them kind of get comfortable in their new home and stand their ground a little bit. You gotta really fight for what you want. Everybody's looking to change something or this or that or whatever it is, and you'd be amazed how much your world changes if you don't stand up and call out on stuff that's, you know, not right.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, we're trying to communicate and get it sorted out as a community without being ugly to new neighbors, but, you know, trying to promote some neighborliness, like some friendly kind of, you know, discussion.
Well, get this new neighbor on a bike, you know, maybe she's just never been on one before.
Yeah, I think the neighbor needs maybe to pick up a bicycle and maybe appreciate it more than, I think the excuse was some sort of garden they wanted to build,
uh-huh,
or I don't know, that they were obstructing their view out the window, and the previous guy didn't mind much, but he's moved on, so
right.
Um, We'll see. It's interesting. Well,
these are the little challenges that that we facing. You know,
it's such a little thing, but with a lot of rental situations, people don't really have much. You know, they have to kind of play that game, and the landlords and owners often abuse the leeway they get, and it's basically our responsibility to provide some sort of bicycle lock and hauling bikes upstairs and stuff like that. So, And it's something the management has talked about maybe doing something, but the owners aren't really agreeing. And it sounds like a baseball team, it's just crazy.
It'll work out, Kyle. It will definitely work out. It might get ugly. It might take a while, but it will work out.
Well, we're prepared. I mean, there's a pretty strong bicycle community in the building, and maybe we can turn some people's lives onto some bicycles.
Maybe you could make it a requirement that people who live in that building be bicyclists to start with, so that you won't have this kind of conflict. Well, it's something to think about.
Yeah, well, definitely. We've got a 12-pack, so workout.
All right. I'm reading another story. I'm just sort of browsing the news because I haven't actually looked at what's going on today until I got here. But it's interesting because this story reminds me of when you were here. Sometimes when you're here, you tell people who live here more about their area than what they actually know. I don't know if that's because you're more observant or maybe they're just like, daydreaming or something like that. You're the one who pointed out what has changed with the Empire State Building lately.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to briefly mention that?
Well, way back in February or early this year, I suspected the Empire State Building had been upgraded or modified because the lighting of it was changed. And when I'm out there, I tend to go in and out of the city and approach from different ways and, kind of get all over. So you get to see all these different perspectives when you're getting onto the island, Manhattan Island there.
Yes,
so
yes.
In any event, I noticed during, Valentine's Day, that the lighting was fading and doing some interesting things. And I wondered or asked that maybe they had upgraded the lighting or something. I had kind of a gut feeling. And I think someone confirmed my suspicion, but we didn't actually look it up or anything. I just had a feeling, and I did notice this weekend it was a nice rainbow color for the Pride event.
Yes, I'd like to talk about that too a little bit, but let me first update people on this particular story about the Empire State Building from the Daily News. New Yorkers are used to looking up the Empire State Building, seeing it illuminated with different colors for events and special days, such as team colors during the Super Bowl, green St. Patrick's Day, red, white, and blue, 4th of July. However, recently, New York's most iconic building got a lighting makeover, replacing the old lights with new LED lights that can dance, flutter, sparkle, and move in endless combinations. So what's going to happen during the whole fireworks thing going on in a couple of days for the 4th of July, they're going to choreograph it to the song New York, New York and Empire State of Mind by Frank Sinatra and various things like that. And the lights show is going to somehow correspond with the finale. So that's going to be interesting to see that.
Wow.
Yeah.
if it wasn't so hot here and my eyelids weren't as sunburned as they are, that would be really exciting to watch, but I can't see right now.
How
hot out here?
How hot is it?
I think it's 80.
That's not hot.
25. That's I don't know. Maybe 90. Maybe up to 30.
You're saying it's hotter there than it is here?
Maybe
in Seattle.
We're close to the sun, I think.
I don't know if you're closer to the sun than we are.
Well, the sun's lingering. It's staying up there,
Well, it does set over the ocean, and it takes longer to set over water than it does over land. That's true. So maybe that's what you're feeling.
Yeah. Well, regardless, it's sweltering. People are really dying. I feel all right because it's been fairly hot there. I don't think it's the same. Different kind of temperature. So.
Well, let me just conclude this story by saying that the new lights in the Empire State Building are 50% more energy efficient than before, and they've been up since last fall.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but, again, we're looking at things that are happening in front of us and commenting on them, and other people don't notice. I noticed the tower swaying at Coney Island. Nobody else was really noticing that or caring. You noticed that the lights in the Empire State Building were different. Nobody else really noticed or cared. And these are things we should care about. Swaying towers and brightly illuminated buildings, definitely.
Absolutely. Gotta have some awareness and look around a little and take in all the sights.
Yes, absolutely. To move away from the Empire State Building, to move a lot away from the Empire State Building, to Pluto. I don't know if you heard about this, but Pluto has, they just discovered the fourth and fifth moons around Pluto, and they've named them, as of today, they've named them Kerberos and Styx. Yeah. The names referring to a three-headed dog and a river separating the living from the dead rank second and third in international public vote. Well, wait a minute, that's not correct. I don't know about this river, but it was named after the band. Hang on, are they there? Yeah, this band. Styx, the song Come Sail Away. That's what they named the moon after, not any stupid river someplace. So I don't know what that's. People really should do some research before they write these stories. Okay, but that's enough of that song. I don't want to hear any more of it. But yeah, so now two new moons have names, but I'm not sure how. If Pluto's not a planet, how can it have moons? Does that make any sense to you?
I don't know. It could have things that orbit it.
Like, yeah, satellites. I guess an asteroid can have a moon
how
too.
How is it a moon? I don't know.
Well, okay. So what they did was they had a contest. I don't know about these contests. I never hear about these contests until it's over. But the winning submission was Vulcan. And that was vetoed by the International Astronomical Union. Did you know there was an International Astronomical Union?
No.
IAU. These are people we need to get to know, Kyle, because it may not seem like much now, but the universe is big, all right? Yep. And if you know somebody, the International Astronomical Union, I'll just say the IAU, you're gonna have friends that you can call upon for various. Why is that song up again? Turn that down.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that song keeps coming back. That Sail Away song about. Well, I don't know what it's about. Actually, I don't understand that. It's a song from the 70s.
UFOs.
I'm sorry.
Aliens.
Yeah, it is about aliens actually. Yeah, because there was a starship at the end of it.
Yes.
But it's going to be on my mind now for the rest of the week, and I won't be able to get it out of my mind. Now there's something else I want to talk about tonight, and that is the conference coming up in July. July into August. It's the Ohm Camp. Ohm means observe, hack, make. Is that correct, Kyle?
Yes.
All right, and it's happening in the Netherlands. And in traditional Dutch style, there is a Dutch hacker camp every 4 years. The last one was Hacking at Random in 2009. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And we were both there, and it was a ton of fun, and we're expecting to have a ton of fun this time, too. But what's different this year is that we actually have a 2600 village.
Now, that's open to a fair amount of interpretation.
Okay.
This is what we make it.
Interpret away.
Yes, we do have a spot on the map, so to speak. We do have a distinct location where we will identify our organization.
We're in the north, I'm told. Well, I mean, we also decided to be in the north, but we are a northerly village.
We'll see how it is when we get there and be a bunch more approximate and come up with some kind of signage. But yes, I think somewhere in the north, we'll have a decent place to set up a central meeting point, as it would be. And a lot of these camps have organized tracks and some vendors and these kinds of things, but the biggest part is where everybody camps.
Yes.
Because usually they'll create some kind of community, whether it's representing their hackerspace or their project or just their region, among other things, but people set up these neat places where they can show off their projects and have a good time. And in any event, we've not ever really had a central place, but we've, of course, been participants in this event for quite some time.
It's going to be a blast because there are going to be people from all over the world. And by the way, it's not too late to decide to go. Kyle and I, we got our tickets to travel only a few days ago, and we got some pretty good deals, too. People are saying they have to spend huge amounts of money. Just around $1,000 will get you overseas and back for not just to the city you want to go to, from multi-city travel, which it's a lot of money, but it's not as much as it could be. And if you're going to take a vacation, obviously you have to spend something. Point is, you can do it. You can do it on short notice, and you can go all kinds of places and explore while you go over there. You don't have to just make it a couple of days. You can make it a couple of weeks. It's not too late to register. It's not too late to be a part of this. It's something that you will remember for the rest of your life. I know because I've been to a bunch of them, and I remember every single one of them. They're all very different. They're all really cool and filled with interesting people, activities, just stuff you don't expect. But we have a little wiki page for the 2600 Village. Is it okay if I read a bit of this, Kyle?
Yeah, go ahead. I think that would be great. People might want to hear it and check it out and look at some other villages too, but see some of the things that we're thinking about doing, and if they want to participate, join us.
Well, it says, hello, we're organizing our village here, 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, is the premier magazine of the global hacker community, publishing since 1984. We have been sharing and disseminating information to hackers all over the world who have helped define high technology and its uses. We have had a presence at every major Dutch camp since the very first one in 1993. Our official village for Ulm 2013 will provide a meeting point and base for all NSA field operations. Agents will occupy our barbecue. Wait a minute, hold on. I don't remember this part. Agents will occupy our barbecue and sip coffees when not patrolling the grounds. Heat will be provided by the warm glow of our prism pile activated by lasers. Kyle, did you write this part? Did somebody else write this?
I don't remember anything about
you know,
that.
About these wikis, you never know who's going to modify something. Are we going to have NSA field agents wandering around our camp?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of agency in the field, so...
No, you have to ask permission, okay? If you're going to come on our camp and wander around, whether you're from the NSA or whatnot, you gotta get her okay for that.
We'll have to check back and look at the history there. I think... we'll invite all sorts of people, but yeah, it's good to identify yourself. Introductions, I mean, it's only polite.
Yes.
When you're getting together with old friends, new friends, all that kind of thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, we'll definitely be welcome to all sorts of people. And I guess that's them RSVPing or something?
might be. Let's just continue. This is the part I do remember. We're really excited to join everyone for camp and plan to coordinate a few rather informal activities as well as uniquely 2600 events, like a remote monthly meeting. You know, the first Friday of the month, we're going to be there, so we might as well have a 2600 meeting, as happens every first Friday of the month. We'll have it right there on camp. We're also going to do a radio broadcast of Off the Hook and Off the Wall and various other things. We're also working on these items that we were just kind of brainstorming on, but basically we can do anything with your input as well. Hacker writing workshop, and that's important for people that want to write articles for 2600 or for anyone else, basically gathering your thoughts and finding an interesting topic to talk about. That's something that I think is really important and a valuable skill to have. I'd like to join people and help create a hacker bill of rights. What does that mean? Well, you know, people are seeing their privacy eroded everywhere. We're seeing aggressive prosecutions of people for nothing more than curiosity. This is stuff that's been going on for decades, but there's also a lot of new things that are happening. And it's time that we stand up and say, no, this is not right. This is how it should be. And I don't see any reason why we can't at least start to formulate something known as the Hacker Bill of Rights.
Absolutely. And a lot of these will be ongoing. We'll probably set aside some slots to sort of have a group discussion over it and then continually discuss both these items that are important to us. And we think they would be good jumping off points for what's important and what people are really interested in these days.
Yeah, you know, I kind of doubt we'll finish it because Bill of Rights tend to take a while, but we can at least get the framework, the foundation started, and share information. So if you're interested in that, definitely stop by the 2600 camp at Ulm. Also, we're going to have a Club Mate recipe contest. You care to explain what that's all about, Kyle?
Oh, sure. Well, I think Club Mate is a staple of the events, especially in the summer. So we're thinking if people have different interesting recipes, we could have a bit of a tasting for different things. I know the Germans do chunk, which is like a little bit of like white rum and lime and some brown sugar. So that goes really well with mate. But I'm sure there's other recipes. We're thinking maybe some sort of margarita with club mate, or I don't know, any variation of a drink. It doesn't have to be alcohol. It could be a mocktail.
Well, you mentioned margarita because of the scientist who died this week, who I had never heard of before, and I feel like an idiot, but I saw her name, and I was like, that's the name of a drink, if nothing else. Margarita Hack was her name. Margarita Hack.
Yeah, Margarita Hack died this week.
And no disrespect intended for just thinking of this as a drink. It's a cool name, but obviously a really cool person as well, very intelligent, and I wish I had studied more about what she did.
Yeah, I saw an interview too with her. She's really like what she does, and sort of a passionate woman that just worked and worked and worked. And I don't know, she's got some interesting things. So she's a physicist.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And various other concoctions and inventions. You know, we went to a club actually in Brooklyn that has Club Mate now, an electronic music club, and it was crowded with people, and everybody had one, and it was really very surreal. I felt like I was back in Germany.
Yes, yeah, it was really neat to go to a venue that people were drinking Club Mate and enjoyed it, and yeah, it was just cool to get to know people that are excited about having it in America, and after all, it is Club Mate, so to see it at an actual club is really neat.
Yeah, really cool. What else do we have here? Temporary tree-friendly crow's nest and rope ladder.
I helped craft that idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think something, it depends on the trees out there. We can't be doing too much permanent altering of the land, obviously, because these events are temporary, and I don't want to hurt any of the trees. But if there's any good climbing trees, we might want to have like a bit of a rope ladder,
right?
A crow's nest or something.
Yeah, it is named the 2600 Forest.
Sort of survey the camp and see what factions might be approaching our campsite, our village.
Yeah,
we definitely, as much as we have an open policy for our 2600 village, we have to defend our village, and we're really excited about that. I think a lot of people want to help out and keep their villages sovereign.
Well, as I mentioned, it is called the 2600 Forest.
Yeah, well, we do have the entire forest. It's technically ours. Is an old gift, I think.
It dates back to
a
long ways away, but the paperwork isn't important. But what I do want to get is one of those telescopes that you hold with one hand. What do you call those?
Eyeglass.
Yeah, but it's long, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, well, or a telescope, but yeah, a nice spyglass or something to survey and make sure that other villages are maintaining their distance and whatnot.
Now, we're also going to have a potluck barbecue of various sorts. And Kyle, you're a maniac with the barbecue.
I'm excited about that. I love the barbecues. I mean, that's a big thing with the Dutch and the German. I mean, camps, you've got to eat. That's a staple. You know, you've got to survive out there. And it's a couple days of, impromptu infrastructure and hacking, and you're up and all that. So you got to recharge and get some food. So we really want to coordinate, because I know a lot of other villages will have these long dinners, and just food is a great way to socialize. It's a good thing to come around and help out with. And so anyway,
a great way also to
potluck or two in our space,
right?
Be able to invite people that have hosted us or and been so gracious in the past. We'll be able to share the fun and invite them this year.
It's also how you learn about other cultures and other countries and what they eat and various things that you learn at a barbecue or in a kitchen.
Absolutely. Pardon me. I'm having a bit of a I sneezed a couple times.
Yeah, you sound
allergies.
You sound a little stuffed up there, like you're allergic to something.
Yeah, it's really really warm, and I think the trees that I'm allergic to have decided to bloom, and I'm suffering a bit.
I'm sorry.
I pardon everybody for that. But
I'm sorry, Kyle. That's but I'm sure you'll acclimate.
Yeah, it just takes a little while. but I'm just going to stay hydrated here.
Let me just conclude what we say on this page here. We welcome people to stop by and say hello, as well as get involved with or add to our projects here. We encourage everyone to consciously try to meet as many new people as possible and allow them to do the same. This is a very big event with a whole lot going on. Have some fun, too. And that is important. I think the reason we wrote that is to encourage people to not just latch on to one community or, God forbid, one person, and branch out and just talk to as many people as you can and learn and share and bring that information back to where it is you come from, and contribute your own experiences and your own philosophies and ideas, because that's what makes an amazing gathering.
Absolutely. That's something we were out just thinking broadly, because we've been to a number of these events before, and it's really cool and stimulating to interact with people and have a lot of fun and share ideas. But I think it's good to also let things go, let things flow through, you know, and really experience all you can there and not get too fixated, because it's so much to do, so many different subjects and topics.
Absolutely.
Old friends and new friends, too, to meet. And that's just something we've learned, and I think that speaks to what a lot of other people want to do, because a lot of people are on vacation and they want to catch up with people and relax a little bit. And other people are really excited about their projects, and, you know, you want to share and do that, but you also want to, like, free yourself up so you can go check on other things and meet other people, see other cool things that might give you an idea or instruct something else you're doing, and vice versa. You know, people want to be free to do that as well. They'll happily chat and whatnot, but it's good to just mix it up and keep moving around. And that's really the highlight. I mean, that's kind of what's going to make, I think, our village work out really well. So we're going to be kind of low-key, and we're not setting huge expectations for what we want. We want to try it out and just see how it goes. We're definitely going to be able to have some kind of cooking capacity, and I think that's a hard enough challenge to get down.
Yes.
But if we can do a bit of barbecuing and maybe some of the workshops, I think we'll be really, really thrilled at the result, which is participating and you know, being able to have a central 2600 village.
I see here we have a workshop scheduled on dead tree publishing that will take place under some live trees. So that in itself will be interesting to talk about, because dead tree publishing, in other words, paper publishing, it's a
yeah,
hot topic. And people discuss the future of that, and does it have a future, and various other things. There's also going to be various demonstrations of hacking, and I see a list here. I don't quite understand it. It includes RGB LED, PDP-10, and Google Glass Ultimate Fighting Tournament. Wow. Okay. Well, that sounds like a draw for sure.
Yeah, well, we'll be discussing retro computing, multi-user systems, I think, just informally. If you have any experience on PDP-10s and old systems, we'll have some interesting conversations with you about that. That's kind of a leaping off point for general discussion. So if you've been on such modern equipment lately, we'd love to discuss it with you, and maybe you've learned something interesting about it. It's pretty well-established technology, but it's fairly new, the whole multi-user Unix operating system. And then we're also going to be doing the RGB hacking, and also like Raspberry Pi microcontrollers, a little bit of stuff. That's stuff I'm learning about and sharing, and other people are learning about that. I know a lot of hacker spaces and young people are doing stuff with Arduinos, and I don't really know microcontrollers that well, so I've just gotten into that. So hopefully we'll get some LEDs blinking, and that'll maybe serve as a beacon for our village.
And hopefully somebody will bring a PDP-10 mini computer as well, so we can set that up.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody's got one of those in their trunk, and they can just back up and hook it up. There'll be plenty of power.
It doesn't fit in
have some kind of.
It doesn't fit in a trunk, Kyle. It doesn't fit in a trunk.
A big trunk. Anyway, we'll have like Ethernet and maybe some sort of switch. And
yeah,
like every other village, you know, just a little bit of the basics, so that we don't have to run all the way in for different things, and we can host some food.
Yes, and we will have shuttle services by bicycle going back and forth to whatever village is nearby to get supplies and things like that. So that'll be kind of cool.
I think that's going to really help the barbecue situation, is if we can coordinate some bicycles so we can get into the butcher shop and stuff.
Yeah.
Or you know, get some kind of food at maybe a market in a local town.
I see also that we're encouraging people to learn about our new documentary, and maybe we can say a couple of words about that. Basically, we're filming a lot of the interesting things that we see and come across in our travels, because there are just so many amazing, interesting people to meet and to get ideas from and to just witness some of what they're doing. Obviously, this conference is going to be an amazing place to see so many of them, but these people exist everywhere. And we're open to ideas as to where to go to see other interesting people that are up to some interesting projects or inspiration of various sorts. It's kind of hard to really describe it, and maybe people don't realize. With a documentary, you don't really know how it's going to end. And we're at the stage now, we don't even know how it's going to begin. And it's hard to explain that to people who think that when you make a film, you have to know everything about it from the start. Well, we don't really. We're learning as we go along as to the direction we want to take. We do know, though, that it's a compelling story, and there are going to be a lot of very interesting characters involved. We don't know how long it's going to take. We don't know where it's going to take us. But I think we're really enthused about it.
Yeah, some people might not realize. I guess this is a thing with when you're producing stuff and you're doing kind of media practicing and like making content and stuff, that we're doing multiple things. Excuse me.
Good night.
My allergies. Well,
I should say Ahmadinejad, because that's what I say when people sneeze now.
Oh, Ahmadinejad.
Ahmadinejad, yeah. And it just sounds like something you say to somebody after they sneeze.
It does sound like something you say to somebody when they sneeze.
Yeah.
Ahmadinejad.
Yes. you were saying before you sneezed. You're talking about filmmaking,
right? You're multitasking. You're shooting for. So we might have a couple different projects. You just don't know. We really want to just practice and get good at filming the kinds of things we see, the kinds of things we hear. We'll be doing a little filming in the camp, but also around as we travel a bit and visit with people. Perhaps that have written us or listened to the shows or just that might host interesting spaces or have interesting communities in a different place than our own.
Yes, definitely. So a lot to digest, a lot to participate in. And if you're going to be there, great. We look forward to seeing you. If you haven't decided to go yet, definitely go. And I assume tickets are still available, but you can find out for sure by going to the website ohm2013.org. That's ohm2013.org, and learning as much as you can about that particular gathering. It's just one of the hacker traditions that we have, and happy to be a part of it. Well, something else that we were a part of over the weekend, which was truly incredible, you mentioned it a little while ago, was the Pride celebration in New York City. This is a particularly festive one because of the defeat of the Defense of Marriage Act by the Supreme Court rulings of last week. But boy, you know, we just sort of went in last minute to see the parade and to hang out and just wander around. But it had to be one of the happiest events I think I've ever witnessed. Just people in such a festive mood, just nothing but positivity. I mean, even the cops were really into it, it seemed, and were smiling and helpful. And it's just great to see that kind of a mood instead of something confrontational. And it really is something I don't think I can remember something that big that was that happy ever.
Yeah, I think people really get what it's about. The cops, it's not a new thing. It's not a, or you know, people in the neighborhood or people that are attending for the first time, they're open, their eyes are open a bit. They're amazed by the amount of support that there is in the community. And it was neat to see the parade a little bit and to see the neighborhoods where people were walking back and sort of trekking to the historically significant parts of town where a lot of the movement actually started 44 years ago.
Yeah, 1969. It was incredible. Stonewall is where it all began.
Yeah, 1969.
And it's particularly significant now because of all the changes that we've witnessed And also because of the various hate crimes that had been going on earlier in the year, things really were starting off in a bad way. But when you see so many people, hundreds of thousands of people, I can't even begin to count how many people were there, you realize how big this has become, how in the mainstream this now is, and how this country really has changed. We don't notice that enough. And we've talked about this ourselves, because obviously you haven't experienced quite as much of the history.
No.
But things were very different. Things were very different, actually, only 10 years ago, extremely different 20 years ago and beyond that. So to see it actually come to this, where people can just be open about who they are and recognize their beauty and the people around them,
yeah.
It is something. It is something truly moving and inspirational for so many other things as well. And, you know, seeing a cop telling someone dressed in drag to stay sexy forever, you know, and to mean it, that to me is huge. That to me really was a moment that I'll never forget. And so many other moments like that we saw, just seeing the many, many different participants, companies, organizations in the parade that were just marching down Fifth Avenue and extremely proud of what they represent and supportive of the people that are around them. It's a kind of thing that you really need to embrace.
Yeah, there's a lot of pride there. You know, those guys securing the event were very proud to help the community out and just let people be the way they were going to be. And I didn't sense a lot of attitude at all. Like, everybody was really accepting of, you know, other people being different or having fun or just, yeah, letting loose and kind of being really out there for the day and happy.
Yeah.
For all that's gone on and just for the event itself.
And Stonewall, sometimes I call it Stonehenge, I can't help myself, but Stonewall is where it all began when a very different group of police back in 1969 raided a gay bar and abused the people there.
Right.
And people just got fed up and started to fight back. And that's where it began, literally on that block, the gay rights movement. So it really is inspirational. And it makes you wonder who will be inspired by that to lead their people into something that is more fair and less abusive than the way they live right now. Because there are still so many organizations, so many groups that deal with a lot of crap, you know, and ignorance is something that I don't think we'll ever completely get rid of, but it is good to see progress, and we do need to acknowledge that occasionally. There are a lot of things we point to, we complain about, and we say this is unfair, but we do live in a different world than we did a couple of decades ago, a couple of years ago even, and it's good to be able to point to that and say, yeah, you know, we did something, we got somewhere, and this is inspirational, and we're going to keep going.
Right. People, you know, you can actually distinguish between, like, straight and gay couples now.
Yes.
It's not just, like, what's totally considered normal and then there's an other. It's like, well, they're equal groups and you distinguish between one or the other because whatever it is that you might be pointing out, any distinction you make, you realize that they're two equal things. They're two equal distinguishable couples or types of families, and there can be annoying straight families and annoying gay families, but
absolutely,
they can all still be annoying.
Absolutely. Everybody can be annoying. That's all we want is just the right to be annoying, like everybody else. Hey, Kyle, we're out of time. I don't know where the hour went, but always a pleasure. Always fun to have a conversation. And any last words from you?
Last words? I've never got any last words. I'd say just I'm glad I made it home safe, and I miss you, and want to say hi to everybody out there in New York, and can't wait to see some tall city bikes
and
other exciting projects that are happening in the Big Apple and elsewhere around the world.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to this summer. It's going to be awesome.
Me too.
All right. Right now, though, on WUSB, we have Finn coming up, so I can't get more awesome than that. It's a manual for Off the Wall. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Have a good night.
Hey there, kids. Finn with you. Finn's Revolution, WUSB Stony Brook until 9 p.m. Tonight we have part one of an interview with the great, the legendary Keith Levine, co-founder of The Clash, co-founder of Public Image Limited, a great, great guitarist, one of my favorites. Great guy. Stay tuned. We're going to start right away. Yeah, kids, we got a chance to talk to Keith Levine the other day from Great Britain, where he currently is. And the first thing we talked about was his upcoming book. And we're just going to let things roll from there. There's going to be, it's not just an interview, there's plenty of music all in between. Interviews with Keith will just be throughout. And stay tuned for the whole mess. This is part one of it. It's quite an amazing, amazing interview. Very insightful. Learned a whole bunch of things I didn't know. And I got to tell you, here's Keith.
All right, so Keith, you have a new book coming out. Is it actually out yet digitally, or is it?
It's not out. And the thing is, I was reluctant. I didn't want to do a book, and I never wanted to do a book. And this has come up over the last 17 years. Oh, you're going to do a book? No, I'm not going to do a book. Oh, you should do a book. No, why? Why should I do a book? You should do a book because everyone's doing a book, and you can make some money. Oh man, you know, is that the reason to do a book? I don't think so. My life's not over yet. I don't want to do a book. I don't want to do a book. And then, you know, I was with a colleague of mine. You may have chatted with her on email. And we were looking at various projects. I mean, we weren't looking for this, but this thing jumped out. And I don't really want to mention any names, but let's just say someone well-known was doing yet another thing, you know, very, very recently. And it's something to do with these kids that hitchhike across America to see the Sex Pistols. You know, it's like the million people that were at the 100 Club gig. I mean, you know, when I was at that 100 Club gig, there was 14 people there. Now there's a million people that were there. And it's like, you know, so Kathy turned around to me and just said, oh, my God, you know, what a pain. And I just said, look, I don't care. I'm going to do 2051. I don't care about this stupid movie. And I don't care about the $2 million advance or whatever it is they got for this bunch of crap, you know. Anyway, the next day, you know, she just started kind of questioning me on this and that, you know, just talking, and she's sitting there typing it, yeah? And like, and then she read it back to me, and I said, okay, I'll do a book, we'll do a book, you know, because the reason it interested me was, it was just good conversation. It was just like, if you were talking to a guy that was 17 or 19 or 21 that was around in that scene, it sounded like exactly what happened. And actually, I'm that guy, I'm not a punk. So I just said, I called it Diary of a Non-Punk Rocker, you know. So September was the target date. I think realistically, it's all going to be 2014. Realistically, you know, I might be able to get one of these albums I'm working on out before 2014. But there's no point unless we can back it up with the necessary, you know, the necessary, teamwork that you need to do, because, you know, there's no record companies now, social media, all this kind of thing, and there's something missing on our little team. I don't know what it is. I know what it isn't. I know what we don't have, and so it might be smarter to wait till 2014 when I can back this up.